Highly flammable cladding that led to fires in London's Grenfell Tower and Melbourne's La Crosse fire is back in the spotlight as a Senate committee proposes the banning of its sale, import and use in Australia. The Wire's Rebecca St. Clair has the story.
The Senate committee heard from a range of organisations across the building industry to come to its conclusion. But the Coalition and a number of engineering and fire specialists say banning the product is not going to solve the problem. They say that education and industry reform are also essential. Chris Stoltz is the Victorian President of Engineering Australia. He explained the construction of the cladding material and why it's so dangerous.
It's a little bit like a vanilla slice in the sense that it's two sheets of aluminium separated by some gooey stuff called polyethylene, which is highly combustible. Some of the manufacturers attempt to manufacture the product with a better resistance against combustibility, but that makes it more expensive.
As an estimation, how combustible is the cladding?
Cladding your building in this material is like spraying petrol on it. Now, that's okay. So long as there's no flame, then it's probably safe. The minute you get a flame, then you've got a passage for a fire to travel along. If you think of the La Crosse fire, which was in Melbourne, where the cladding was only connected vertically, then the fire was pretty much contained just to a line of apartments. But in the case of the Grenfell fire in London, the cladding was joined both vertically and horizontally, so it only took about 8 minutes, I believe, for the whole building to be surrounded in flame.
Engineers Australia was a part of the Senate inquiry into the use of polyethylene cladding. What would that mean for buildings that may be at risk?
Before it's used, the building should be subjected to a fire safety engineer's design, because there are circumstances, particularly in low-rise buildings, where the cladding is quite safe. This is particularly the case if it's used outside verandas or decks and so on. So not just about cladding, it's about the way in which the cladding is used in a building and what sort of a building it is. But what we recommended to the Senate was that in the short term we need to find out what buildings have the cladding. For the long term we need to look at what measures need to be undertaken to prevent it happening again.
If the audit results come back that buildings such as hospitals and apartment complexes have used the cladding, what would be the next steps to ensure that something like the Grenfell Tower disaster doesn't happen in Australia?
As I said, so long as there's not a flame, then there's no immediate threat. But the minute there's a flame, any high-rise building, those buildings will be engulfed in fire. So what we need to do is identify which buildings have got the cladding and then work out how we're going to remove it or replace it. And that's quite tricky, because if we think again of the La Crosse building, the developer who developed that building has come and gone, the builder has come and gone, and so the building is now owned by people who live in it. The estimated cost of removing the cladding and replacing it with a less combustible material has been estimated at about $35,000 per apartment. At Engineers Australia, we've suggested that maybe on a no-blame basis, the state government should, in this case, consider helping people replace the cladding.
Chris Stoltz, Victorian President of Engineers Australia. Matthew Wright is the Deputy CEO of Fire Protection Association Australia. He says the key to reform is education.
Reform should focus on ensuring improved understanding and application of the current code, which would already result in preventing the use of combustible products that spread fire on building facade. If the code was applied properly, it would already be prevented from being used.
How would you inform everyone so that everyone's working to the same standard?
If you look at other professions, the medical profession or the accounting profession, there's expectations for people to have continuous professional development and have ready access to maintaining their skills in applying the regulations and the procedures or best practice. I think in the building industry we have a really disjointed approach to that, and there's a number of different roles within the supply chain and the design, construction, approval and maintenance chains where some broader awareness of the core functions is really necessary, and anything that state and territory regulators can do to increase educational opportunities and then also take proactive enforcement measures is something that we would say could improve the competency of the sector.
Matthew Wright, Deputy CEO of Fire Protection Association Australia. And Chris Stoltz says there is more to the issue than just the cladding.
The issue about how the cladding got to be there and how it was allowed to stay there really goes back to our building inspection processes. And so one of the things we need to do right across the country is to review what powers organisations like the Victorian Building Authority have and make sure that they are exercising those powers to ensure that things like this don't happen. And if they don't have the legislative power, then our legislators need to give it to them. And the second thing is that it's not about overseas materials either, because Australia is quite capable of producing cladding and a number of other cheap building materials that don't conform. So we need to make sure we're looking at the proper issue and not being emotional and jumping to the first thing that comes in mind. That's been a bit of a problem with some of the politicians getting their heads around it, because they thought it was all about cheap Chinese imported materials, and that's not necessarily the case.
Chris Stoltz, Victorian President of Engineers Australia, ending that report by The Wire's Rebecca St. Clair.